My name is Michaela Hecklin, and I will go and talk about our CMEM data simulation system. And basically, to assess the transport characteristics, I will take observation from satellites and from aircraft and compare it to the model output and to see how CMEM performs and to make conclusions about what it should perform better and what is already performing very, very good. So I want to acknowledge before I start all my collaborators from whom I got a lot of input and also slides and figures which I show. So Stephen Beagley, Andreas Johnson, Diane Pendlebury, Saroja, Sujan, and Pep. So basically atmospheric transport is influencing the tracer distributions in the atmosphere. So what you see here is a scheme of the atmospheric circulation with the basic components like the large scale ascent in the tropics and then the downward diabatic downwelling in the extratropics. And also some known features like the tropical pipe or the polar vortex edge, and the surf zone, and then the weak large scale stirring in the summer hemisphere. So this is important to have this kind of structure and all the small scale structure also in there to get the right tracer distributions, because in the end they feed back on the climate. The word option circulation, as I said before, it does influence the tracer distributions, and you see that the upwelling in the tropics here in the CH4 distribution taken from Howell and Class data shows this upper bulging high mixing ratios of CH4, and then as soon as you go through the tropical edge, you have a strong gradient in the tracer. You have the surf zone, and again a strong gradient across the polar vortex. So these are all things that our GIS system should be resolving. Another feature is what we were seeing also in really nicely in aerosol measurements after the Mount Pinatubo volcanic eruption by an airborne LIDAR, which shows this really fast, rapid lateral transport outward from the tropics into the extratropics at around between 18 and 22 kilometers. But above this level, you also see that the tropical pipe is a very good barrier to mixing and transport. So that's a region where models might have quite a lot of difficulties to represent that the right order. We will come to that later on. As you saw yesterday already, Matt Vesper's talk, he showed this plot by Schoeberl et al, where they did different calculations with different GIS systems of backward trajectories to look at the dispersion of the trajectories. And that's around this height, about 20 kilometers. So you see that in the kinematic trajectory calculations, you have a lot of vertical and horizontal dispersion, and in the diabatic calculations, you have the trajectories which kind of spread out in the horizontal a little bit too much, I guess, or at least too much compared to a GCM, to a free-running GCM, where the backside trajectories stay closely around the initialization location. But this influences badly the tracer distribution, you can assume, and that was shown by Douglas et al. In the JGR 2003 paper, where he basically compared the NOI ozone ratio obtained from aircraft data, that's a latitude plot, meridional profile, with different GIS systems again, and with a free-running GCM. And that is what the free-running GCM showed, like the strong tracer at the tropical edge is very well reproduced by the GCM. But as soon as you move to the data simulation systems, then the gradient is getting really flattened out. And yeah, I think it's a little bit confusing. This is black year two. Here down here is the gray thing is year two, and the data simulation is down here. The same for March 1999, it's also kind of flattened out, and that says that we have too much dispersion. So the background of it is that, or the idea now is that all the 300 GCMs or CCMs, they now have quite a good age of air. So dispersion will not only influence trace distributions, but age of air is also kind of a measure of how old the air is and how it is transported along in the meridional and in the vertical and so on. So to have these strong gradients also in the age of air, it's really important. And again, you have here two aircraft data, the black points, and then different GCMs, how they reproduce the age of air. And just in this example, because we use it afterwards, our CMAM shows that it reproduces the age of air very well. So motivation for this study. Like recently, some authors have suggested that a point might have been reached where the intrinsic elements of data simulation prevent certain transport applications from further improvements. But CTNs are driven offline by analyzed wind fields sampled at a certain frequency and often suffer therefore from too strong dispersion, what we saw just before. So CMDIS, however, calculate the direction within the model code, so it's inline, and also provides higher temporal resolution. And from that, this procedure then should mitigate the effect of the noise introduced by the 3D war simulation, and should therefore also be more usable for the detection of chemical species. And in this study here, I will test this hypothesis by investigating the transport characteristics of the CMDIS. So, but it's the basis, like I use the CMMDIS. It is based on the regular Canadian atmosphere model, and I just point out some things. It's a fully coupled chemistry climate model, and it has about 72 vertical levels. It's a T47 resolution, so roughly 3.7 degrees. And the 3D VAR, it uses the data simulation system, uses 3D VAR data simulation, and basically takes all the physical, the usual physical components for assimilation, but most observations are limited to below 10 hectopascal. And there's also no assimilation of that in the mesosphere and no assimilation of chemical species at all. So I use other models to compare with, like the ECMWF analyzers and NTAP, and observations from different satellite data and aircraft data sets. So first we have a look at temperature fields, because these are telling us something about, is the radiation scheme in a model well represented, and also is the dynamics correct. So what you see here is a figure from Andreas Johnson, and he was plotting different global mean temperatures for January for a couple years of NTAP, and then for different CMMDIS runs for 2002, 2003, and 2006, and then for a CMM reference run here, the black curve. And what you see that what happens if you assimilate the data, then the temperatures go closer to the NTAP analysis, as you would expect. Cooling the upper stratosphere or middle to upper stratosphere, but what it also affects is the tropopause, the lowest, the cold point here, and it makes the data simulation makes this a little bit too cold. Something that would have to be investigated, I guess. So another way to look at it is the annual temperature cycle at 100 hectopascal, which shows an exact compensation between the tropics and the exotropics, which was found by Uleva et al. 1994, and who showed this in the in the year 15 data. So you see, this is the monthly annual cycle for the tropical annual mean and for the exotropical, and they really compensate with a maximum at 8 in August, basically. And there are again the comparison to a different tools, to a lot of different models, and we focus on the CMEM again. The CMEM has quite a good compensation between the exotropics and the tropical region, but it is a little bit too warm in the tropics and a little bit too cold in the exotropics, which as soon as you have the compensation, then this tells you that the radiative scheme, the radiative forcing is right to extend it in the model, but the blue adoption circulation is a little bit too weak, so it cannot pull the temperatures in the tropics to really cold temperatures, and then the downwelling in the exotropics is also too weak, producing that we have there too cold temperatures. Now, here on the right, down here, you see an improved version of CMEM and also a higher resolution. One is the CMEM reference run that I use for comparison with the BIS system. And what you see here is now the gray shading is the NSAT years, the blue is the reference run, and the red is the data simulation. And what we see is that there's a large improvement to compared to this CMEM run here. The seasonal scale, the seasonal evolution is quite nice represented, and also the amplitude. And data simulation improves a little bit the seasonal cycle, and it goes again a little bit too cold in the tropics. So now we go and look at tracer distributions in different regions. I start in the mesosphere, and I just show you two slides with comparisons to CO here. And that's again a meridional profile for different altitudes. Like this is 0.01 hectopascal at around 78 kilometers, 64 kilometers, and 46 kilometers. And the gray shading is the BIS run, and the black data points they were obtained from the ACE observations, and the ACE satellite. And what you see is that CO is a really simple tracer to simulate in a model, because at these heights it's only or basically just produced by the photolysis of CO2, and it goes away by oxidation of OOH, but that's it, and it should be simple to and it indicates. It's therefore also kind of a nice transport tracer, because there's not a lot of chemistry involved, and what we see that like at the lowest level. It looks really nice, and then as you go up, the highest concentrations at the highest latitudes in the northern hemisphere are not that well represented, and that's a winter time for the northern hemisphere, where you have the polar vortex, and it just indicates that CMEM does not transport enough high concentration CO from higher altitudes down to these levels in the polar vortex. For July, there's another comparison, and it looks better for the southern hemisphere. For the H2O, that's the same plot basically for H2O, the same altitude. And what I want to point out is that the seasonal features or the latitudinal structures, they are really very well resolved in CMEM. What it is a little bit fake, because the CMEM values had to be adjusted by 2 ppm. So CMEM data usually in the stratosphere is too dry. So now we move down to the stratosphere. What is plotted here are again meridional profiles of, in the upper panel is N2O, in the upper panel it's ACE, the black data points again, compared to the free-running CMEM, the red data points, and in the lower panels it's the CMEM DAS for the year 2002. And what you see is that CMEM agrees very well with the tracer distributions and the meridional gradients seen in ACE. So basically here you see the tropical edge again, then the surf zone, and again the polar vortex edge with the really strong tracer gradients. And then in the summer hemisphere, you see this kind of slowly sloping features. If you go to the Siemens BIS, if you would assume that you have too much dispersion going on and so on, you would expect these tracer gradients to disappear or to be affected somehow. But in the N2L, which is kind of a long-lived tracer, it looks very nice still. Like the model performs very well, even in with data simulation. So now we move to the ozone. So what does do data simulation to the ozone field? Again, up here is Siemens, the free running one, and down here it's the data simulation run. And what you see is that, again, the meridian structure is very well resolved. The highest level in Siemens does not have the, you see the red points down here, should be up here. They are too low, the ozone values. And as soon as we move to the Siemens BIS, we see that this highest level in JGA improve. And this can be explained by the temperature structure that we saw before, that the BIS makes the model colder in the exotropics. And this is again influencing the reaction rate, which then allow ozone to be less fast destroyed in the catalytic cycles. So it is a clear improvement. And the meridional structure is also quite very well. There is some kind of a fluctuation in the tropical region, which we have to look a bit closer. Now, when I looked at different years in the low at the lowermost levels, like 300K to 350, the lowest one, and 400 to 450K. And I, this is for 2002, 2003, and 2006 data simulation runs. We see that in the southern hemisphere we have too high ozone values. And basically, we have to ask ourselves: don't we have enough chemical ozone loss, or is it a transport problem? Here in these levels, we might have a lot of dispersion going on. So I think Gloria will also talk about more about this topic. But I just show another diagnostic that you can apply to find out what happens in this region. And one of them is to use the ozone N2O correlation slopes, which are seen, that's in a Bregman et al. Paper, in a model study, that the ozone N2O slopes are decreasing with age, with the chemical age of the air masses. As they are transported to higher altitudes and latitudes, the slopes are decreasing. And in the end, you would find down here a certain slope that is indicative of what chemical processing these air masses went through, or which kind of transport pathways they went through. So what you basically do, you take all the measurements you have. This is an example from an aircraft campaign. You make a scatter plot between N2O and ozone, and you take the slope value out of that. So, and then you can plot a seasonal cycle, and I did that here for the free-running CMEM for a 10-year climatology. You see these indicated in the blue and the gray bars. The blue bars are for the polar region, the gray bars are for the mid-latitude region. Then in black you see the same seasonal cycles derived from the A satellite measurement, and you see this strong seasonal cycle in both data sets, and this splitting up of the two branches in early winter, and which the splitting up is once explained by the separation of the two air masses, and then in the polar region that you also have chemical ozone loss going on. So it is an indicator of transport and chemistry, but when I calculated the same seasonal cycle for the DAS, we see that the slopes are way higher, and this is indicated for way younger air. So we have some influence of tropical air masses, of air masses that give you a higher slope. We can now go and make particle dispersion calculations to see how is the meridional transport really going on. So these are thought that Diane Pendlebury was producing while I was eating my nice dinner yesterday. I think he should stand here and explain them better. But you see, it's the particle dispersion from forward trajectories at 420k for 5, 10, 15, 20, and 25 days. And what you see is also that you have, after 5 days, you have some Rossby or Sinopis stellar and Rossby wave activity going on. There are some filaments going away, breaking off, there are some events, and after 25 days, the dispersion is quite high. As soon as we move up, so imagine this is about the level where we have in this, where we have the only outflow from the tropics, which was observed, but we do not know how much that we need in the model. We have to, again, we have then afterwards to go and compare that to tracer measurements. But if you move up, we would expect the tropical pipe to come into action and to stop this transport. And indeed, if you do the particle dispersion calculations for 480 Kelvin, you see that the tracer movements are way more coherent, and there are only a couple events that bring you particles out of the tropical region. So you can plot that as a function of altitude for forward trajectories which are initialized at different levels. Here for Sinus 63, 80, 420, 460, 500, 520, 540, and 580 Kelvin. And you see, it's nicely, like, down here you have this strong meridional transport. This here is partly in the troposphere, that's why we have really a lot of vertical movement going on. As soon as you move up and you come to the lower edge of the tropical pipe, you have a really nice transport barrier in the southern hemisphere. The CMDIS shows more dispersion here in the northern hemisphere. So this is a plot for winter. So basically what I want to say is that this outward transport might be too strong as seen in the tracer distributions. But when, again, as I look at the NOI meridional profile, it's not too bad. It is about the same, it is the same behavior in the DIS as in the free-running reference run. So it is an underlying, it's a problem of the underlying GCM, it's not a problem of the DIS itself. So now we go down to the lower stratosphere, upper troposphere. In this region, because you have a strong gradient of tracers across the tropopause, you would expect that dispersion and introduced noise by DIS will have the highest impact on tracer distribution. And this is a plot that we could illustrate that. If you plot data, if you get it from aircraft data, satellite data, or model data, and you plot it just relative to the geometric altitude, you get kind of a huge scatter. But as soon as you take the tropopause as your reference level and you plot your data relative to the tropopause, then you get this really strong gradient across it in all the data sets. And this is a nice diagnostic to see is a model performing well. And on the first chart here, the CMMDS does very well too. We have this strong gradient and then this background value that is kind of constant. We can use different tracers to look at that, and let's again see all the high values, the tropospheric tracers, high values in the troposphere, small values in the stratosphere, and the strong gradient across. This is for high latitudes, that for mid latitudes. The three panels are CO, ozone, and H2O. So that's the equivalent that we saw before. Here it seems that we have some kind of noise going on. There is some kind of a bulge in the H2O, which looks a little bit strange. But in general, like, the gradients are well reproduced also in CO. There might be a little bit too much influence, again, from the tropical tropopause region, because although the gradient across the top of body is very well resolved. In a height between 2 and 5 kilometers above the top of body, we have some kind of elevated CO, which is not what we would expect too much. So that's about it. I think I should probably stop. That's just to give you an impression. PNGAS has a lower resolution than ECMWF, but a lot of structure still, this is a PD field, is still resolved. And like I zoom in here, it's just a horizontal plot on a potential temperature level. And it's really nice, the comparison to ECMWF. Like all these structures very well resolved, even this kind of low in here, the stratosphere extremer coming down here, and this kind of cutoff low in the middle of Europe also, and that's a vertical cross section, and you see there is not a lot of structure going on in the CNGS, but still, like some tropopause faults are captured. And if I just make a short comparison, I fly through here, through the CMWF and through the CMDIS with an aircraft, I take tracer measurements, and I compare the two aircraft measurements to our model, what the model produced, then I can get pretty nice comparisons. Like temperature is clear, it is assimilated, you would expect pretty good temperature data. But then the ozone, the CO, and everything, the strong gradients at the tropopause are very, very well resolved. And to compare to different DIS, so to say, the red line is the DIS, this time series of H2O, the blue line is ECMWF, and ECMWF is dry, and DIS does even a better job. And the sport data are a little bit wetter, but that's also more things to look at. So I come to the summary. In general, the CNDS compares well with both the free-running CMEM and observation except for H2O, which shows a low bias of around 2 ppmv. I skipped that. There is a clear improvement in the upper stratospheric ozone due to corrected temperatures compared to the free-running CMEM. We have compares with A-satellite data and AR2 aircraft measurements show that the latitudinal gradients in N2O, NO, and ozone are maintained when going from the free-running CMEM to the DAS system. And this kind of implies or lets us conclude that inland advection probably mitigates the effect of noise in data simulation systems and makes 3DVAR analysis usable for advection of chemical species. So this might be a way ahead in order to improve tracer transport in data simulation systems. Thanks. And I'm over time. Sorry for that.